Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNX News, 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Brought to you by LMU Loyola Law School.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
On today's Countdown 2024, the American media is headed into a second Trump administration in a state of transition and uncertainty, with legacy outlets losing their audience and advertisers, and non-traditional media like podcasts and TikToks gaining new prominence, the ability and willingness to investigate the president-elect and hold him to account could be waning. So we are dedicating today's show to journalism in the age of Trump. But first, this.
You might have heard this one before, but here we are again. The federal government is headed for yet another potential shutdown in 10 days. The government has been funded through a series of continuing resolutions for the last several months, and with the latest one about to run out, lawmakers don't have a deal to keep the lights on during the holidays. There are several hang-ups to a deal, from requests for tens of billions of dollars in disaster relief to Republicans prioritizing spending cuts.
Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of Defense might just be pulling his nomination back from the brink. Pete Hegseth has received fresh support from several Republican senators as he continues to meet with the men and women who will be voting on his confirmation. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, who is seen as the linchpin to the Hegseth nomination, has been on the receiving end of several threats of political retribution from Trump supporters if she fails to back Hegseth.
President-elect Trump mocked Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau after Canada's leader traveled down to Mar-a-Lago over the Thanksgiving weekend for dinner with the once and future president. In a post on his Truth Social, Trump referred to him as Governor Justin Trudeau of the great state of Canada. Trump continued, "I look forward to seeing the governor again soon so that we may continue our in-depth talks on tariffs and trade, the results of which will be truly spectacular for all," is what Trump wrote. He has threatened to put 25% tariffs on all imported goods from Canada and Mexico.
In Donald Trump's first interview with legacy media after the election, he did what he's been doing pretty consistently over the last decade, bending the truth. Here's how he answered a question from Meet the Press on why Trump felt that 2024 was a fair election while 2020 was not. And we left in the somewhat awkward pause at the end.
Democrats have control of the White House now. They didn't in 2020. If they're going around stealing elections, why
didn't
they do it
this time? When you say Democrats have control now?
Of the White House.
Yeah.
So why didn't they steal this election? Since they have more power now.
Because I think it was too big to rig.
Yep, there was that pause. How are journalists going to deal with this second time around? Julie Rogensky worked as a political strategist and then was a longtime contributor to Fox News and CNBC. She now leads the women's empowerment group Lift Our Voices. And Brian Krem has been covering the White House for various outlets for many years, most recently for Playboy magazine, when he regularly did battle with Trump himself and other members of the first administration. Brian now hosts the podcast Just Ask the Question. Both of you, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Brian, let me start with you since you covered the White House. Do you get the sense that the press is likely to be more cowardly in the second Trump term? And is there any evidence that there is already?
Well, that's assuming that we were courageous in the first one.
Okay.
No. I think with limited exceptions, there were a few of us who fought back against Trump. He tried to take my press pass three times, tried to take Jim Acosta's. We had to fight and beat him in court to stay there. Otherwise, I think there are some people that ask some good questions, but mostly you're going to see the bowing of the knee as you already are. Look, you played some of that Meet the Press stuff, and I know Kirsten Welker pretty well, and I like her as a reporter, but there's a skill to doing these interviews and the gravitas that we lack very much in the press corps today. And you know, when he started out saying he had to end COVID first, well, he didn't end COVID first, and she should have stopped and asked questions on down the line and just followed him and made sure that he was held accountable for what he said. You don't have to call him a liar, but by the way, he is, and bending the truth is bending the truth about what he did. He's a liar. And I called him that, and I will continue to call him that, because that's exactly what he is. He does not tell the truth unless it benefits him. Most of the time, what he does is threaten. I would anticipate that in this coming administration of Donald Trump's, you will see him do these things. He will limit the participation of the press in the briefing room. Now, some of that's going to be good, because those first two rows are access journalists, and I don't call it legacy media, it's corporate media. He's going to put them in the back, he's going to put his friends up, and they're going to be 200 reporters who never get to ask a question. They're going to be very happy that it helped to some very elitist, self-important access journalists. That's going to be fine. But then he's only going to hold a couple of briefings a week. He's going to be in his office for maybe 2 hours a day, and he's going to avoid us. And there is no courage in the White House Correspondents Association or among the six or seven corporations, by the way, that own 90% of what you see, read, or hear.
But Julie, let me ask you about that, because Brian said that there is no gravitas now, and I guess not even in the first Trump administration. Do you agree with that? And if so, why isn't there?
First of all, I agree with everything Brian just said. So yeah, I could not have said it better myself. I think a lot of it is bending the knee. And you mentioned that I used to work at Fox News. Well, you know, when I first.
So did I.
I was the one of the few Democrats at Fox News for a while when they still had them. And I can tell you, you saw it happening even as Trump was starting his ascent. When he came down that golden escalator, everybody at Fox laughed. Publicly, some laughed harder than others, but nevertheless, nobody took him seriously. And then you saw it, the access, the attraction to power, the ability to be able to sit down with the president of the United States and ask him a question. And all of a sudden, everybody fell in line. Now, Fox is an extreme case, and I left there shortly after Trump became president. But I will say that's a disease that permeates a lot of the DC press corps. And the truth of the matter is, that access rules the game, right? And if you have access to the president, you are a big deal. Now, I would say that that is part of the reason why legacy media, or however Brian wanted to term it, I think he termed it better, access corporate media, that's one of the reasons why it's dying. And that's one of the reasons why podcasts like his and Substacks like mine, Salty Politics, are on the ascent, and that is because you now have people who are not afraid of saying what they mean and meaning what they say, because nobody cares about access. If Donald Trump is lying, I, for one, will call him a liar. I don't necessarily think we need to criticize everybody who voted for him. I think there are ways to speak to people who are Trump supporters to try to bring them over to the other side. If you're somebody of my political persuasion, and you have to do it respectfully and not in a way that alienates them or makes them feel like you're condescending to them or otherwise treating them horribly. But as it comes to him and the people he surrounds himself with, you know, men at the age of 70-something don't change, and they only get more so. And the reality is that he was who he was the first time around. Apparently, people have short memories and they've forgotten. You know, the first administration is going to look like a garden party compared to what we're in for. And I think that's something people need to be aware of.
We are speaking with Julie Roginski, who was a contributor to Fox News and CNBC, and Brian Karam, who has been covering the White House for various outlets for many years, most recently for Playboy magazine. Brian, you were talking about, you know, at the White House and Donald Trump limiting the ability for journalists to really get access to ask questions. How do journalists who are in those corporate organizations, how are they supposed to combat that?
Well, you're going to have to combat it by taking chances and by speaking up. And that's not what. Look, when I first walked into that briefing room in 1984, Sam Donaldson, well, the first person I met was Helen Thomas. And that's the reason why I call my podcast Just Ask the Question. She said, Brian, it doesn't matter if they answer the question. It doesn't matter what their answer is. Just ask the question, because that way they cannot deny that it's been put on the record for them to see. So we don't do a lot of that today. We swallow our questions. Second person I met was Sam Donaldson. Sam said, Brian, you look at that first row in the Brady briefing room. In those seven seats, there's probably more than 200 years of experience. And then he joked that Helen had 190 of it. But his point was, he said something smart that was kind of funny afterwards. But his point is well taken. The amount of experience that was in that room then is not equal to the amount of experience in that room now. It's far greater than now. There are people graduating from college going straight to the White House. They're enamored of the access of being in the White House. They're enamored of being that close to power, and they don't speak up. They've never covered a beat before. They don't know how to ask a question. They don't know how to follow thoughts. Listen, in the briefing room, some of the best questions I've ever asked in that briefing room, I was listening to what the briefer was saying or the president was saying and followed others. And if you listen to the people who held that job as press secretary, most notably Mike McCurry, who was the best that I ever saw, Mike would say, Brian, we learn as much from those briefings as you do. We learn what the people are asking questions about, and we adjust policy to it. No one's listening today. Everyone is, it's performance art in the briefing room. The questions are made to get a soundbite. They're gotcha questions most of the time, and the answers are just skating. And look, this is the word, I'll say this about, you know, and I've said it often, Biden has simply the worst communication staff of any president I've ever worked with. Hands down, the absolute worst. Biden is, and there's a reason why they lost. And that the reason why they lost is they don't know how to communicate. And so it's compounded by the fact that you have reporters who don't know how to push the issue and ask the questions. And until that changes, things are not going to change in that briefing room. And in fact, Donald Trump takes advantage of that. He'd love it if you don't ask a question or can't push back. That's what he wants.
All right, Brian, hold that thought. We will continue our conversation about journalism in a second Trump administration next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Margaret Carrero. President-elect Donald Trump has repeatedly referred to journalists as the enemy of the people and has even called for investigations and prosecutions against a few of them over the years. How serious are journalists taking the threats? The group Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press is once again urging members of Congress to pass a bipartisan shield bill that would establish federal protections for the news-gathering rights of journalists. We're continuing our conversation with Julie Roginski, formerly of Fox News and CNBC, and former veteran White House correspondent Brian Karam. Julie, I want to bring you into this conversation. We have a few examples now of like journalists, even media owners, actively seeking out areas of agreement with Donald Trump. We saw MSNBC hosts Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough go to Mar-a-Lago to meet with Trump. We've seen newspaper owners, including Jeff Bezos, actively praising Trump, talking about moderating their coverage of him. Does that make you nervous at all?
You know, people who are listening to this of a particular age may remember this reference, but to me, this is like a Superman 2 moment where they kneel before Zod, right? They're told to get on their knees and kneel before Zod. And that's what they're doing. The President of the United States and Superman 2 did it to save the world. These guys are doing it to save, I don't know what, their careers, their corporate
money.
Reward, access. But they're, Mika and Joe, who, by the way, helped create Trump, because let's not forget how much time he spent on Morning Joe right. as he was coming up, almost as much time as he spent on Fox and Friends. They spent New Year's Eve after he got elected, after the grab them by the you-know-what tape, after all of that came out. They spent New Year's Eve at Mar-a-Lago right before his inauguration the first time. So these are not people who necessarily shy away from bending the knee or kneeling before Zod. Do they worry me? No, because I think that they discredit themselves. What does worry me are people like Jeff Bezos and the owner of your local newspaper in LA who have business interests before the federal government that vastly exceed anything that their newspapers can deliver for them. And they're basically using their purchase as owners of the press to steer good coverage, or at least not bad coverage, of the administration. That's how tyranny begins. That's how autocracy begins. When the free press is no longer free, when oligarchs, for lack of a better word, start bending the knee to power even before power is actually in power. I mean, they did this kind of like arbitrage on Wall Street.
Willingly.
You know, this is a game of arbitrage, as all Wall Street people know how to do, where they were hedging their bets during this election. You saw Elon Musk proudly now say he was kind of covering up for it before the election, but now proudly say that he made the right decision. He made the decision to not endorse Kamala Harris, going over the head of his own editorial board. And you think about these once proud papers that cover local news. I'm not even talking about national news. I'm talking about people like in LA who are not getting their news the way they should be from the LA Times, people in Washington who are not getting their local news from the Washington Post, because the owners there are hollowing out those newspapers in order to advance their own much bigger corporate agendas. And that is just a tragedy, because by the time this administration is gone, I don't really know if we're going to have much of what the media used to look like in the past. Maybe that's a good thing. It may be a good thing, because as we talked about, there's a lot of access journalism out there. But the reality is there are reporters out there, Brian, I remember when he was at the White House, used to be one of them, who are really asking, Jim Acosta, another one that Brian mentioned, doing some really, really, really good journalism, asking some really tough questions that are important questions that are based in reality. And what you're going to have now is that people, and you've seen this happen already, are going to be listening on the right. They're going to be listening to their podcasts on the right and to Fox News.
Yes.
And, and people on the left are going to be listening to whatever the left eventually, once we learn how to communicate with voters, develop. Hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later. But the truth of the matter is that the people who are paid to not be either right or left, but are paid to ask the hard questions, are going to be out of work. And that worries me tremendously.
Julie, you brought up the LA Times. Brian, I just want to get a quick question, because we're going to have to take another break here. This idea of a bias meter that the owner of the LA Times has announced that they're going to be beside stories starting next month. What do you think about that?
Me? I think that sucks. That's not journalism. That's that. And journalism is in algorithms. Look. There are twice the number of people on this planet as on the day that I was born, and there's a quarter of a number of reporters. The LA Times is one of the biggest problems, bowing to Trump ahead of time, bringing in Scott Jennings, whom I've known and is not a journalist, and as a talking head on a editorial board. This isn't journalism. Journalism is vetted factual information. That's what is sorely lacking. And this idea of meterizing or putting a meter to it is not what journalism is about. Journalism is about communication between and among people. That's what it's about. There are 45, to what Julie was saying, there are 45% of all the counties in the United States do not have a local journalism source. 45%. That's a horrible, horrible problem. There is a demand. There is a need there for it. But it's not being filled. And you're going to see what used to be journalism before journalism existed in the beginning of our republic, when each party had their own mouthpieces, pamphleteers and newspapers that spouted what they thought was news. The idea of vetted factual information, there still is a realm for it. And I'll go back to what Ben Bagdikian of the Post said many years ago. He said, never forget that your obligation is to the people. It is not at heart to those who pay you, to your editor, to your sources, to your friends, or to the advancement of your career. It is to the public. And we have forgotten that in journalism. And that's not what this guy at the Los Angeles Times wants to do. What he wants to do is to monetize it. It's become all about money. So until you change that, you're not going to have journalism. I'm tired of reporters telling me what their opinions are. I've mentored them. I've worked with them. They come to me and go, Brian, this is what I think. And I go, I don't care what you think. I barely care what I think.
All right, Brian, I need you to hold that thought. Got to take another quick break. We will finish off our preview of journalists gearing up for battle with the second Trump administration next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the Tuesday edition of Countdown 2024. I'm Margaret Carrero. Sticking with us, former Fox News and CNBC contributor Julie Roginski and former White House correspondent Brian Karam. Very quickly, you two, we're running out of time here, but one final question, the idea of a lot of Trump's bluster and threats, do you believe that they are designed to intimidate journalists in the hopes that they will cower away from tough coverage of him? I will start with you, Julie.
Yes, they are designed to intimidate and cower journalists, and they're designed to ensure that we no longer have a free press that's not doing his bidding.
Brian?
And it's also designed to make sure that he gets FaceTime on TV because he's an attention whore. So there's more than one purpose to it. But yes, at the end of the day, that's what he wants to do, is to make sure that we bow to him and we don't ask the tough questions. And I assure you, we should.
All right. Thank you both so much, Julie Roginski and Brian Karam. Thanks for joining us on the show today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you miss a show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.